Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Guys, it's June, which means Juneteenth. It just happened. But do you even know what Juneteenth is? Well, don't worry, because Andrew T. and Tani Newsom of Yo, Is This Racist? Are putting together a Juneteenth special to celebrate and educate just for you. This week, Yo, Is This Racist? Sits down with some of their favorite Black comedians about their experience with Juneteenth. Guests include Carl Tart, Kara Brown, Lacey Mosley, Ify Wadiwe, a mysterious token white person, and more. Check out Yo, Is This Racist? Juneteenth special. It's out now. And I, in general, love this podcast. You should subscribe to it. Listen and subscribe to Yo, Is This Racist? On Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app.
Fake the Nation, episode 153.
I've identified two things, basically dancing and karaoke, as things that I love doing that are just, there's no fucking actual professional. Yeah.
Also, I feel like they're analog. Like, this is the other hobby that it like can't be something that can be involved with a screen.
Yeah.
Right,
or
right.
Substituted.
Mm-hmm. I was talking to my therapist about, like, why do I love karaoke so much? And she was just like, well, that makes a lot of sense because there's so much breathing in it, and singing and breathing. Yeah. Breathing calms the nervous system. And I was like, oh.
Medical. I didn't realize that. Yeah,
there's like straight up medical reason why singing makes you feel
Korean
good.
And Japanese people live for
they
so long.
They figured it out.
Yeah.
Just drink like 10 beers.
Exactly.
And sing with your friends.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and where we just can't help but play this clip.
We'll see my financial statement at some point. I assume it's going to be released. You'll be very impressed with the job I've done. Much, much bigger, much better than anybody. They're after my financial statement. The Senate, they'd like to get my financial statement. At some point, I hope they get it.
You're going to turn it over?
No, at some point, I might. But at some point, I hope they get it because it's a fantastic financial statement. It's a fantastic financial statement. And let's do that over. He's coughing in the middle of my answer.
Yeah, okay.
I don't like that, you know?
Your chief of staff.
If you're going to cough, please leave the room.
Get a shot of, and I'll come over here.
You just can't.
Just to change the shot.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, you want to do it a little differently then?
Yeah, we just changed the answer.
Okay, so he does another take of that really brilliant answer about having phenomenal financial statements. You guys, I cannot get over this fucking clip. We don't need to talk about the George Stephanopoulos interview. We don't need to get into it. I'm your host, Nagin Farsad, and apparently Mick Mulvaney doesn't get pre-notice from his throat when he's about to cough, which is so unusual. My fucking coughs are on a timer, so, like, I just know and I can leave the room in advance. I don't know about you guys.
I mean, if any of you guys cough during this podcast, I'm going to use it as an excuse to, like, begin at one, start over,
edit.
Get the perfect edit in.
We have to do that in post.
Yep.
His whole presidency is just him giving takes to the camera. It is a nightmare. But you know what? We're not going to talk about that today. I mean, in a roundabout way, we're kind of always going to talk about that. But we're actually going to talk about the relaunch or ongoing launchiness of the heinous Trump campaign. We're also going to talk about the miserable tension with Iran. And we'll also talk about the future of sex work. And finally, the wellness industry, has it outlived its usefulness? Today, I'm really excited about this panel.
first-timers both, many-timers to the world of media, so it doesn't matter that they're first-time on their show. This show, they're many times in many of your hearts is. We have with us the editorial director of the Mashup Americans, an independent media company that deals with everything that's hyphenated American, and they have a newsletter and a website and a podcast, so you should definitely be subscribing to Mashup Americans. We have with us Amy Choi. Hey,
hello.
Amy.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, my God. Thanks so much for being here. And I think your stuff would be completely up the alley of Fake the Nation listeners. So I hope they are now currently taking note.
Go do it.
We also have with us writer. She's written for many of a publication, just finished a long stint at New York Magazine. And she's also the co-host of the Night Call podcast. You guys, it's Emily Yoshida.
Hello.
Hey.
Thank you for having me.
So happy that you guys made it onto the show. Let us begin with topic number one. Okay, so Trump kicked off his dumb campaign with a 76-minute speech. 76-minute speech. He's so fucking long-winded for a guy that has very little content in the stuff that he says because it's repetition, you know? Because it's just repetition, you know? but he made this 76-minute speech that, like, made angels cry and unicorns, like, go back into their caves or whatever. Do unicorns secretly live in caves and then come out
into
rainbows?
Ocean? I don't know.
They definitely live in Orlando.
Yeah. They live in Orlando. And basically it was a speech that made me want to eat carbs and that, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was bad. And I guess let's just start with your initial reactions to this re-kickoff of the campaign that never ended, because if we'll all just take a moment to remember, he refiled. I keep saying re, but he filed his papers.
Like the day he was inaugurated,
on
right?
his inauguration day for the 2020 campaign.
Couldn't wait. It's yeah. his favorite thing to do is campaign.
It's his favorite thing
because he doesn't
thing
actually
do.
Govern. I have like, my pulse is racing. Like, okay. I feel heat rising from my body.
Yeah. Let's all check our Fitbits,
I know,
you guys.
Like, I can only imagine that the experience of my rage and disgust for this human being and the feeling that I have when he speaks is that must be what for his like diehards, like the euphoria they get.
Yeah.
I mean, it is so – I have a physical reaction to seeing his picture.
Yeah. No,
or
agree.
To like hearing his voice. You can see I'm like making – it's a podcast, yeah. You can't see, but like wild
there's
gesticulations.
A lot of flailing. There's a lot of flailing.
It makes me feel – like, I'm losing my mind.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, but this is also why people love him. Like, the exact – and like, what he's outlining in his idiot non sequitur campaign speech.
I know. Outlining was such a, like, elegant term for what he was doing. But, yes, what he was outlining.
Is, it, like, this stuff that makes me feel like my skin is peeling off is mm-hmm. what – his supporters love. And
yeah.
I'm like, how is this even possible?
I mean, so there's a lot, though, for them not to love, right? Because he didn't get the border wall. He didn't manage to repeal Obamacare. He hasn't gotten an infrastructure bill. The economy has been strong, but everyone's still on the lower rung suffering, right? So income inequality has just strengthened. Why are they so happy?
I mean, I think the thing that's continually fascinating to me about Trump in campaign mode is how he's able to always be the aggrieved person. He's always able to be the victim, even mm-hmm. as president of the United States. It's like a cool trick.
Yeah.
But I think
it's a talent. It's like there's
yeah,
a
yeah, like turning on. The entire Mueller investigation into a thing, like in his speech where he's just saying, like, this is what they're doing this to me, but they're really doing it to you.
To you.
Like
yeah.
And that is such a it's an ingenious flip, I have to say. And like I genuinely don't think when you're appealing to emotions in that way, when you're appealing to people's sense of victimhood, which it's really hard to get people out of sense of victimhood once they're in it, it doesn't matter if he's not delivering on anything. Like,
yeah.
he's making them feel, like, you know, mad and justified in their anger. And that will trump, so to speak, anything, I think, for this campaign, certainly.
Also, they're racist.
Yeah.
And he's racist.
Yeah.
And he makes them feel good about their racism.
Right.
And there's so they're that. Real happy.
Well, I think, okay, I mean, one thing that I was noticing was that, you know, so there's this, the way they look at him is like a demigod, right? It's not just a presidential candidate or, you know, the president. There's this other quality that they're tapping into that they've created in their perception of a demigod. And I wonder if, you know, in 2008, when Obama was giving his speeches and the world went crazy, even I remember when Obama gave a speech in Berlin, I think during the general election in 2008. And I'm going to say 100,000 people showed up or something ridiculous, a ridiculous number showed up. And this was Germans, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? That Obama also possessed that quality and that on the right, to see liberals fawn over that man felt the same. So in that context, are you a little bit more sympathetic to how they might feel?
Well, I think people certainly overlooked a lot of things that Obama didn't follow up on in his campaign promises into his presidency. So, I think there is a certain amount of equivalency, but I think, the racism always tips the scale a little bit. Right.
That's true. Yeah. The other interesting thing, he didn't follow through on a lot of things that he said he would. He also didn't offer any plans for his second term.
Does he ever have plans? Are plans part of his presidency?
I mean, keep building the wall. What else do you want?
There will be a wall
Continue
someday.
Continue to build it in your mind, even.
He's still running against Hillary Clinton.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, he's literally like running against some lady in Westchester who walks her dogs in the forest. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And it's shocking to me because they really need a better villain. I mean, at least move it on to Nancy Pelosi. Like, figure out a way to lock Nancy Pelosi up or whatever. I mean, it just makes no sense. And the crowd was chanting so aggressively, lock her up. I was like, is she still an emotional touch point for you? Like, I mean, she's some lady now.
This is a campaign that's like fundamentally about the past and looking back at the past and like, you know, just obsessing over it all night long and making that a part of your identity. So, of course, they're going to just fixate on an election that's now, you know, 3 years in the rear view. Yeah, and I mean, he will continually refer to it as being, the greatest campaign of all time, because there's measurable metrics for such a thing. I mean, it certainly will go down in history. I don't think he's wrong about that.
I like that he switched his slogan after 2 years to, what is it, Keep America Great?
Yeah, CAG.
Which is also the tagline.
No, just CAG.
Just CAG.
It's the tagline for the Purge, one of the Purge movies. So
is CAG?
Keep America Great.
Is it really the tagline for a Purge movie?
By the way, I watched the first one and I was surprisingly delighted by the movie.
They are great.
It was so
Everybody
good.
Watch the as a former film critic with my authority, go watch the Purge movies. They also say everything you need to know about America.
Yes, and Ethan Hawke. But the
I was too traumatized to finish the first Purge movie. I had to stop it in the middle. As I was like, oh my God, people are just going to straight up die. So yeah. I got to turn this off. Sorry, continue.
Oh, no, I was just saying maybe he hasn't figured out a new villain because he doesn't know who the other candidates are. Like, he can't, there's too many names. He can't remember them.
I mean,
them.
Do we?
No, right.
Facts.
Can you name them all right now?
Right, true. Steve Bullock, Eric Swalwell. I'm starting at the real bottom end. Jay Inslee. Okay, continue.
Oh, no, I was just like, but I think maybe he's just too dumb to move on.
Yeah, well, the other thing is his nickname game has gotten so weak because Sleepy Joe Biden does that. Nicknames have to, like, identify something that everyone agrees is, like, a fundamental characteristic about that person.
Well, he can't very well do segregationist Joe. It doesn't quite work.
He can't, and I thought, like, he can't do, like, hair-smelling Joe because he has so many sexual assault claims on his own. It would just draw too much attention to himself. But Sleepy Joe just doesn't resonate with any. I mean, I'm like, that has nothing to do with it. Biden was never sleepy. Like, I don't
Who's
know.
Who's older, though, of the two of them?
I think Joe Biden is like a touch older.
Yeah, so that's it. Like, he's
older. But it's ridiculous. Old Joe Biden. It's like he's a touch older. Okay, but and the other thing that I want to just mention here, and I, listeners of Fake the Nation, how should we be covering this campaign? I'm really curious. There's part of me that's, you know, I didn't even want to talk about this stupid rally. And part of me was just like, oh, actually, let's use this as an example, as an excuse to talk about whether or not we should talk about this campaign. So how do you think the media should be covering this campaign? Members of the media, both of you, let's hear it.
I mean, in my fantasy world, we take his legs out from under him by not covering it,
yeah,
with the kind of like obsessive dedication that we did to everything that happened in 2015 and 16,
yeah,
and just be like, okay, well, we are actually going to report news that comes out, and there, as you said, zero news. There's zero new information coming out of that rally.
Yeah, it was nothing. Right?
There's
really,
like no
really
policy
nothing.
Points. No. There is nothing about financing. There is nothing about like any sort of aspirational legislation. There's literally nothing happening. So let's not cover it.
Let's not cover it.
Yeah.
Let's not. I know. And I don't know who was.
And as you said,
you know,
like
broadcasting
campaigns been going
it.
For 2 years.
Yeah. You know? We know these rallies. Yeah.
I mean, it started this past week, but it's been going on this
Although,
entire time.
I guess it was a little newsworthy that the Guzzlers were playing at the rally.
Whomst are the Guzzlers, please?
I know.
Like, I don't.
Whomst are the Guzzlers? Is exactly. I have no fucking idea. Never heard of them before.
I mean, remember when we thought it was sad that he could only get Kid Rock? But, like, I've heard of Kid Rock, you know?
I know, at the very least. Yeah, okay. So let us move on to something that's happening with the a created crisis by the Trump administration. So Iran, they're making a case for war against Iran. And a lot has happened in the last couple of weeks. We've been kind of talking about it here and there on the show. There was like the tanker situation. We don't know who – we still don't know who did it. Of course, like Pompeo saying that Iran did that. But now they're trying to make the case that Iran and al-Qaeda are working together. And of course, last night – early this morning, Iran shot down a U.S. unmanned drone, and the question is: was it over Iranian water land, or was it over international waters? Of course, Iran is saying it was over Iran. That's why they did it, and then the Americans are saying it was over international waters. So, and again, I don't know that we'll have an answer on that. And I want to say about whether or not. What we can say is true. Like what, for example, it's hard to believe for an Iranian, it's going to be hard to believe an American assessment of a situation because like, for example, in 88, I think it was the Americans shot down a passenger plane killing, I don't know, 200 something people over the Straits of Hormuz, I think it was. And then said that we never did it, but then years later it came out that they did it. 1953, right? The Americans took out the democratically elected President Mossadegh out of Iran to install a puppet dictator, the Shah. And of course, they denied it, but then it came out later that they did it. All right. Mm-hmm. So for Iranians, it's very, very difficult to believe American assessments. Mm-hmm. And I think on the world stage, I mean, obviously, there's this rivalry has been going on for such a long time. Our allies are even going to be, they're going to question our assessment, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, tensions are ratcheting up. What's going to happen? I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, I know.
Yeah. Tell us. Emily's got all the answers.
No, I have no idea. I mean, this is... I think the drone news, which came in, again, I feel like I got the push alert sometime very late last night.
Yeah,
it's one of those things where it's just like, oh yeah, we're constantly just like shooting drones into other countries, like it doesn't make the news, and it's just like kind of just always happening. It's just like ambient.
Yeah.
I mean,
it probably is always happening, right? There's just drones surveilling other countries constantly. Yeah.
Why not? Just have a few drones out there. I mean, that's always a little bit. of a wake-up call, I think, for most civilian people who are, you know, just fixating on what, say, like Donald Trump is saying from day to day.
Right.
I mean, there's so much stuff in that apparatus that we don't have any idea about.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know enough about the situation to know what the advantage would be for Iran to shoot down a U.S. drone that wasn't in their airspace.
I mean, I think the point that Iran might have made there is we're not going to be pushed around. I mean, I think it basically comes down to that. I think that the drumbeat towards war is so strong that maybe people – I think they're trying to say also, like, you guys fucked up in Iraq. You know, you like, are you going to just do that again? But except for this time with a country that actually has its shit together,
mm-hmm.
that's a terrible idea for the international community. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it does. I mean, do you think the American public, Amy, has an appetite for this war here?
Sorry.
How dare you cough?
We have to go back.
We have to go back. Fucking she rips off her face and it's Mick Mulvaney on the podcast the entire time.
Oh God, I'm so sorry. I could feel it coming,
really,
but I couldn't warn you.
Boy, oh boy.
But tell us more about your finances.
Yes.
They'll be fabulous when they come out. They're going to be gorgeous. I mean, the part of me that hopes that we're logical and have learned from many historical mistakes that we have made with interventions in the past is no, we don't. And I think we now also have a generation of veterans that went to Iraq and Afghanistan and are like, why?
Yeah.
Why? And they're coming back and they're
traumatized,
adult grown people that are, I think, and maybe this is just my age and, you know, me paying more attention to this community than I did. Like, I wasn't like conscious that way in the 90s or the, but that being like, oh, this is actually the long lasting forever impact of a war that is still going on. That is the war of our generation, that we see no reason that this happened.
Yeah.
And there's no success here, right? Like, there is no answer here. So I can only hope that the American appetite for something, for an invasion into Iran is diminished.
Yeah.
And that, like, you know, we are so inundated with so many stories and international stories and horror stories that we're like, okay, well, this is a thing happening in Venezuela. This is a thing happening in Syria. This is a thing happening in Yemen. This is a thing happening in Afghanistan. And that we're just like more
desensitized to all of that news.
We're desensitized. Well, I hope not desensitized. But we're more conscious of it, I think.
Mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm.
People live more in the news that they are. So there's like two sides to it. Like
true.
You can be desensitized, but you also just
know more,
see
yeah.
more and mm-hmm. you know more. That we're like, wait, why the fuck would we do this again?
Yeah, why right. would we
when
do
it
this
seems can kind I, of obviously like a distraction.
Can I scare you guys though just a quick sec with two pieces of information? One is that in 2001, the Congress granted an authorization to the president to be able to like attack anything having to do with Al-Qaeda, right? And so the Pompeo is making the rounds trying to be like, Iran and Al-Qaeda, Iran and Al-Qaeda, Iran and Al-Qaeda. And they're doing that to make the legal justification mm-hmm. to be able to go to war without involving Congress.
Right.
So there's that little thing that I want to instill fear in your hearts. And then the other thing that I wanted to instill fear is in 2012, Trump had said about the Obama campaign, he should start a war with Iran because it'll help his 2012 election efforts. And so strategically, he already has it in his mind that it's something that could be useful for him.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, politically, it feels like, or at least when you're thinking about him running,
mm-hmm.
is that like a war with Iran is his new wall.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like
no,
the
exactly.
new thing that he's talking
yeah.
about.
But what does his base project onto a war with Iran? Like, what do they think that they get? I mean, it's very easy to to pinpoint what they put onto a wall.
Well, there's the Israel aspect of it too, like it putting, you know, taking out Iran protects Israel, and I think his, you know, the evangelical supporters really, really are like staunch. They're really into that, right?
I'm
actually, now that I'm talking about Israel, I actually don't know what the base thinks specifically about Israel, though I think they're generally like super.
Pro.
I mean, everyone is super pro, for the record. I also would like to see Israel continue to exist.
Sure.
Before I get emails about this, right. I am also super pro. But we're talking about being super pro at the expense of other countries versus being super pro in a peaceful, diplomatic way, which is my way. Anyway. Live in fear of every time I open my mouth, yeah. I will be ejected from society. And I just also want to point out the ridiculousness of the logic here, because Iran has also announced that they're going to start enriching uranium. Look, we are the ones that walked away from the nuclear deal.
Yeah.
And now we're like, look, they're going to enrich uranium in violation.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until, that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a roundabout 8 exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket pocket money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, wow.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Of the nuclear deal that we also walked away from.
It's like, so that part of it is infuriating.
And you're like, what? You can't be mad at that if you fucking walked away from the deal. Anyway, hopefully it's just an ultimatum to get the Europeans to help and the Europeans will, and then all of this will fucking calm the fuck down anyways.
Oh my God.
That is my hope in that 95% of my family is in Iran. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. You know what, though? On that really happy note, let's take a quick break. Let's just reset. Let's hear about our sponsors, which are happy sponsors. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about the future of sex work.
Yay! Yay.
Green Chef is a USDA certified organic company that makes eating well easy and affordable with plans to fit every kind of lifestyle, like paleo, vegan, and vegetarian, pescatarian, keto, gluten-free, and omnivore. It's actually the last segment of the show. We mentioned a lot of these eating dynamics, and I did the keto version of a Green Chef meal, and it was so great that they had a keto version. I was delighted because a lot of these meal kit programs like don't necessarily have all of these options, right? And so when I saw keto, I clicked on it like a motherfucker, and I had some keto meals. Green Chef makes cooking easy
with dinner options that work around your lifestyle and not the other way around. With Green Chef, it's easy to eat well and discover new recipes every week that you'll love to cook. You can even switch up your meal plan whenever you're ready to try a new way to eat. Recipes are quick. They're easy. They're step-by-step instructions. I can totally attest to all this. We totally made these Green Chef meals. We had this like really delicious, it was like a salmon situation. And it was so, there was like a green, like a creamy sauce thing. Anyway, for a total of $75 off, that's $25 each of, that's $25 off each of your first three boxes. Go to greenchef.us/fake75. It's a very specific URL, but you guys should do it because it's a really great deal. It's $75 off. And it's greenchef.us/fake75 for $75 off. You guys have heard me talk about Paint Your Life before. It is the best gift I've ever given my parents. I think that's definitely accurate. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and stick with that. Hyperbolic statement. True. Best gift I ever gave my parents. My parents love their new grandchild, and they want to see any representation of her all the time, constantly. So I sent a photo of my baby to Paint Your Life. They turned it into a beautiful portrait that was hand-painted. My parents were elated. PaintYourLife.com basically lets you have an original painting by a world-class artist done by hand from a photo. So you basically have an original painting of yourself, your children, your family, special place, or a cherished pet at a price you can afford at paintyourlife.com. It's a true painting. It's like I said, it's done by hand. It's done by a world-class artist. And there's no risk. If you don't love the final painting, you get your money refunded. With paintyourlife.com, you get your favorite memories transformed into a work of art that'll be cherished forever. And right now, as a limited time offer, you'll get 30% off your painting and free shipping. It's a really great deal, you guys. To get this special offer, text the word fake to 484848, right? So text the word fake to 484848. Again, that's F-A-K-E. You're going to text that to 484848. And don't forget that message and data rates apply. And we are back, and we are ready for topic number two. So you guys, New York may be the first state to fully decriminalize sex work. I didn't even know this was like in the works. I was actually really excited to read about that. The entire issue of sex work just wasn't really on my radar. I don't know where it stood for you guys. But a listener had emailed about it, and I was like, you know what? We really never have talked about it. And it feels like a little bit of a political blind spot for me personally. So I was excited to read about this. The new bill would remove criminal penalties related to buying and selling sex, and it would get rid of charges related to promoting prostitution. It would helping sex workers helping each other kind of screen clients. We would get rid of any kind of prosecution related to that. Anyone who is previously faced arrest charges related to sex work would also see those removed from their records. So it's a pretty, to my mind, a sweeping bill for sex work. What did you guys make of it?
I mean, it's great. I don't know enough about New York politics or New York Senate to see like what its prospects are and if it's going to make it through. But I mean,
it's kind of looking good, I think.
That's good. Yeah, that's great.
That's what I sort of gleaned from it. But yes.
I mean, yeah, I think since the whole Sesta Fosta thing, which was a little over a year ago now, that was put into
Sesta Fosta.
Sesta Fosta is like, do you realize what Sesta Fosta stands for? It's the stupidest acronym of all
yeah,
time.
Yeah, do you know what it is?
I know that Sesta is Stop Enabling Sex Trafficking
Online
Act.
Sex Trafficking Online Sex Trafficking.
Yeah, they
and
delete
then
the O.
Fosta is Fight Online Sex Trafficking
It doesn't
act.
Make grammatic sense.
No, I know. It's terrible.
It's so stupid.
But can you guys explain for listeners who might not know the Sesta Fosta thing, what it is and why it came about?
Yeah, the Sesta Fosta Act legislation was, I mean, that's like the ATM
machine.
Act. it was basically would hold accountable any entity that supposedly enabled sex trafficking. So this was most notably used to shut down Backpage, which was, you know, owned by Village Voice Media. And in that case, there was actually, like, some pretty shady stuff going on. But it also ended
up... It was some shady stuff going, right? And, like, I'd say the majority of the stuff was totally just legit sex work.
Yeah, yeah, which is the case with, you know, 99.9% of these places. I mean, the Craigslist personal ads were a big place where people would find and vet clients and everything. And just a safer way in general to do business if you're a sex worker in the 21st century, where you should not have to, you know, be out on a street in a potentially unsafe scenario.
So right before, they wouldn't have held Backpage liable for anything that went on their website.
It would pass through.
But like, once SESTA-FOSTA went, you know, was enacted, they were held liable. And so that basically shut, I mean, in just immediately Craigslist was like, oh, we don't want to get in trouble. So they shut down.
Yeah, it was
the
like preventative.
Right.
But, yeah.
So a lot of that, so immediately these kinds of places where sex workers found clients and were able to screen clients in a safe way without using pimps, that line of revenue immediately dried up.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were put in a situation where they then either had to go back to the street, like street walking. Sorry, I'm like using terms that I don't really know.
Well, they sound antiquated because they should be antiquated.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I mean, I did a story a couple years ago on an app that I don't think exists anymore that was in Germany that was a kind of like an Uber for sex work because it's legal there. It's this like, you know, decriminalized there. And it just, it felt so progressive to just be like, you know, it's one of these things where it's like, it's not going to stop happening. So let's just try to reduce the amount of times that people get, you know, raped and murdered in the course of this this form of making an income. And I think that all of these places, though, and that have popped up after SESTA-FOSTA, there's Switter, which is like a like a kind of social media.
It's kind of like a feed, a Twitter. Yeah. It's a little more chaotic.
Yeah, and there are other paid ones that are more private. But I think all of them have a tough time because even if you're in a country where it's decriminalized or where it's, you know, not technically illegal to engage in sex work, there are still discrimination. There's still discrimination from banks and legal places. So, you know, even if you're trying to do a totally above the books, like, clean operation, it can be really hard still to keep it going just because of discrimination.
Right, because, well, yeah, banks, I mean, you know, they're not a protected class, like, for example, in Australia or whatever. So they can have the app, but no one's going to accept the money. Banks won't accept the money. And so that's becomes exactly the problem.
I think the thing about, like, it's incredible. I'm 1,000 bazillion percent in support of decriminalizing sex work. The thing that feels really, in some ways, radical about it is the idea that the people who had some sort of criminal record would have those expunged.
Yeah.
Because that's in a way in which you see, like, teenagers who were in jail for selling weed.
Right.
They don't have their records expunged, you know? Like, that this thing that now, like, white mom entrepreneurs are making a lot of money off of, like, doing boutique cannabis
CBD
sales.
Yeah, cannibals.
They're not the ones in jail.
Right,
or, like,
right.
have their whole futures erased by, like, smoking weed when
they
were 19.
Yeah, they don't have to, like, declare it every time they fill out a job application.
Exactly. Or, So I think that piece feels super radical. And I think that, you know, like, maybe – I know that for me personally, like 10 years ago, this would have felt different, not because of my support for sex workers, but because I had been like ingrained in like faulty facts. Like I think the first time I volunteered at an anti-trafficking organization in India for a month or two, like back in 2011, 2010. And back then, it was very much like the numbers that were thrown around were like the global age of entry into sex work is like 13, which now 10 years later has been very
It's like 15 and
a half or something. Still very young.
Yeah.
You know, but I think that those kinds of like
very anecdotal pieces of data were used to marshal support for criminalizing sex work, being like, until we can make it so that, you know, children aren't being trafficked into sex work, then like we should just abolish all sex work.
Right. You know? The sex work and human trafficking being put in the same bucket has always been, they've just been put in the same bucket for a really long time.
And they're actually just not.
And they're like, just they're not at all. Yeah. It's really difficult to, and the, again, yeah, the numbers, you know, we read some pieces about the numbers having been inflated for such a long time and it taking like a lot of pressure on Congress to stop using inaccurate numbers, even on the floor, to you know, to talk about this issue.
And those numbers were really so broadly used. They were used by international NGOs. They were used everywhere. They were used as fundraising numbers. They were, you know.
Yeah. To make this, again, like, obviously, we're all anti-human trafficking over here. But can I just speak for the three of us?
Oh, yes.
I should have clarified that. Against human trafficking. But so I'm not trying to say, like, it's not a problem. But again, I think at that time, you know, just in order to marshal support, there was a lot of fear-mongering using, like, inflated crazy numbers so to get people to get on board, or also because it's almost impossible to quantify.
Right. And it's impossible. It's really hard to take the platform, you know, to say like, okay, maybe let's like tone down this rhetoric and actually look at the problem in a because you don't want to be the person on the side of like, oh, the human trafficking. It's like not as big of a deal as you say. It's really hard to be on that side of things. And I think also like every time I'm in a hotel or watching cable news or something, I'm just like, there's always a special on about sex trafficking or like child sex slaves or something like that. And like, there's a degree to which it's become such a sensational topic that I think is disproportionate to the way how often it happens. And two, like, we're totally ignoring just as horrifying stories of consenting adult sex workers who have sometimes very bad and untenable and dangerous working conditions because of the way that we treat sex workers in this country.
Yeah.
And that's always
and always those the sex workers that are suffering disproportionately are, you know, Black,
yeah,
queer, large, trans,
yes. Yeah, and, Black women, I think, are like the largest group by proportion or something. Mm-hmm. I guess my question is then, where are we culturally on just the idea of sex work? I mean, we in this room are like excited about decriminalizing it in New York State. Where is the average American, and what are their, you know, arguments against it?
I don't know.
I mean, their arguments against it, again, have to do with this bucketing of human trafficking and sex work.
Whereas, meanwhile, I think most of it, isn't it that, like, most trafficking scenarios are about domestic work?
Right.
It's not sex work.
Or, like, working in a nail salon or something. Kind of thing.
I don't know. We're just, like, this is where I'm like, oh, the bubble I live in is so nice. Mm-hmm. But I think America as a whole is like super puritanical.
Yeah.
And so anything affiliated with sex becomes scandalous and dirty.
And yet it's the oldest profession, right?
Right.
Like, it's like such an old phenomenon. We've been living with it for centuries and centuries.
And culturally, in different places, it's been celebrated. It's been like rarefied.
It's all extremely relative here. I mean, I do think that for me, I'm about to do a profile of a famous person who once had a sex scandal, like a consenting sex scandal, with a sex worker, and I was looking back at it and I was going over everything and I was like, man, especially in terms of like Hollywood stories right now, it's like, who cares? Would that be a big deal if that happened now? Like, I think maybe it would still be a big deal just because it would be, you know, salacious or whatever, but I don't think that it would be demonized to the degree that it would. And again, that's still talking about this media bubble, but still.
So Donnie, for example, has had well chronicled instances of infidelity. If one of those instances of infidelity were with a prostitute, a consenting adult sex worker,
Stormy Daniels, she's
in pornography, right?
Well, I think a lot of people could categorize pornography as a form of sex work too. I mean, obviously it's a little different, but you know, it's a broad class of employee that often gets discriminated in the same way. So.
So he weathered that storm, but if it was even more stark than that, like with what, like the thing that happened with Elliot Spitzer, right? So he had an affair, or I don't even know
was
what.
Was just on the website with the Ashley Madison stuff? Is that?
No, he was with a sex worker, right?
I think he was.
Yeah. And that kind of led to his
Google.
And that led to his downfall. Wait, Harry, can you double check that? And that led to his downfall. But it's interesting. I just saw him on Bill Maher last weekend or something,
Fucking
and I
was Bill like, Maher.
but I think he's kind of like recovered from that, because again, even at the time, a lot of people were like, I mean, who among us? You know what I mean? I don't know. I had a boyfriend once. May he never appear in my face again. Who was like a bro dude and had a bunch of like.
Everybody makes mistakes.
I know. Thank you. He had a bunch of like bro dude friends, and they would go to these bachelor parties. Like one of, you know, every time one of them came, it'd be like a bachelor party in Vegas. It was very, very stereotypical. Vegas bachelor party, whatever. And I was just like, just tell me what happened. Like, tell me, break the code of silence and specifically tell me. And he was like, I can say that all of the married men are unfaithful and usually hire someone and have sex with a sex worker. And I was just like, just for real? And he was like, yeah, like just that's what happens. And so I was like, there's an infidelity piece, which I'm not on board with if your wife is not on board with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I would, you know, I thought like, so it's an unspoken thing that everybody's kind of fine with, except for, again, the infidelity piece. But like,
well, the ability is for Trump's base to be able to like overlook this one thing that goes very much against evangelical values.
Also, not like anybody's living according to their values in Trump world.
No,
so like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I don't know. It's really hard to try to apply any rules or logic to this line of thinking when it comes to like moralizing about sex, especially because everybody is a hypocrite in some way or another.
Well, I think what's really actually interesting that you were saying earlier about like, you know, what counts as sex work,
mm-hmm.
like is being a porn star sex work, mm-hmm. or is being a dominatrix that never in like many instances
right,
never has like physical
sensual massage and stuff
like that. Or a voice actor doing like phone sex. Like there's so many ways in which sex is defined that we can't always grasp or understand, especially I think with like, this is where I'm like, oh, this is a new generation of young people coming up for whom the idea of what sex is, period,
mm-hmm.
or the fact that everybody might want to have sex is like, these are not givens at all. So it's like, we don't.
They also like don't have as much sex, interestingly.
I know. But isn't that stat always about millennials? And I'm like, but millennials are every age.
Yeah.
It seems like everybody's a millennial.
Millennials are so old. Yeah.
Many of the millennials I know are just, they're like, at home with their kids. I'm like, why is the millennial somehow for what's happening?
No, totally.
It's like, oh my God, millennials are moving to the suburbs. And I'm like, yeah, because they're 38.
Yeah.
Like, millennials are old.
Yeah, they're old. But your point being that
it's hard to define or criminalize something that we don't even – or it's hard to criminalize something that we don't have a definition for.
Right.
That like, is constantly –
changing. So why not make it safer?
Right. You know? Again, this it's so funny that you mentioned. Yeah, like there's the phone stuff. There's the video stuff. There's the, you know, there's the dominatrix stuff. I mean, there's so many categories that it. And again, it's. I think made possible, like the spreading of these categories by the internet, again leading to the sea change that is our lives.
I think all this legislation is thinking about, like, there's a woman in like fishnets on a corner,
right? You know? And it's just not the way right. it is.
It's
anymore.
Not like a yeah. cam girl who maybe physically never touches a single other right. person, but makes thousands of dollars and supports her life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, those are both.
And is also subject to, like, you know, some kind of insecurity or, you know, potential danger from clients, even yeah. virtually. Like, yeah. that can happen. It doesn't have right. to all be, like, in a seedy hotel room.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's, yeah. I think that we need to think about, when we're thinking about regulations like SESTA FOSTA, what are the unintended consequences? And I think our lawmakers are having a hard time. You remember when Mark Zuckerberg was, you know, was testifying before Congress and someone was just like, how do you unfriend someone or whatever like that? You know what I mean? And like their questions are not kind of thinking 12 steps ahead of how the internet works. And then what are the unintended consequences? Like what happened, which is that maybe human trafficking has gone down. The global figures have potentially gone down because all these websites were shut down. But then also so did safe and a safe income source for a lot of sex workers, that we're not – that's, I think, a big problem is, like, we need to be able to think about this issue and all issues more three-dimensionally and how it relates to how commerce is actually happening. Yeah. All right. Well, let me know what you guys think. Are you excited? Is there a decriminalization of sex work bill happening in your state that I don't know about? Please tell me. And thanks again to our listener for bringing that issue to my face. All right, you guys, let us move on to topic number 3. Okay, so you guys, let's talk about the wellness industrial complex, because you might be keto, you might be paleo, you might be South Beach, you might do turmeric lattes for inflammation or acai smoothies for the antioxidants, you might be fasting 16 hours a day, you might be using an oregano oil tincture, you might swear by bone broth, or you might be munching pineapple for fertility. There are so many things in the wellness industry, you guys. Have you found yourself buying into them, rejecting them?
Actual
where are you with
just
wellness?
Rolled down my eyes. Like actual tears.
Oh, no. It's like keto. It's just like it all just comes out. South Beach is pretty retro, though.
I know,
like,
it
that's
is.
A deep,
I threw it in there. I threw it in there because it actually felt like the beginning, right?
Sure.
It
yeah.
kind of felt like the beginning of it all or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Like the beginning of us talking about carbs.
Yeah, exactly.
Atkins was Atkins
oh,
first.
Yeah.
They were kind of contemporaries. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Atkins.
Like
oh,
when
the
a
fact
dad
that
gets...
we can throw around these fucking diets and know the intricacies of them just without prep.
Yeah.
It, like,
I know more about these diets than I do about Iran right now. Yes! So, you know, like
oh my God.
So have you bought in? Like, have you, I mean, are you still in that space? I mean, where are you guys
okay,
with the wellness industry?
With all the things that you just presented, yeah. that lovely litany of the wellness industrial complex, there are a couple things. One is I, of course, have bought in because I'm a woman living in a woman's body in America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That
period.
So, period. Yeah. So like we are it's programmed in us from birth to be as small and pretty mm-hmm. as possible. And how are all the different ways that we can accomplish that?
Yeah.
So like, yes, I am. And I work very hard as a feminist to not be ashamed of the fact that this has been programmed inside of me. And so I'm now trying to like extract it all. Right. The other thing about what I find very funny about what has become super trendy in the West about so much of like the turmeric latte is like, but these are also actually ancient cultural
yeah.
health.
There's also that.
There's like, yes. there's a reason why bone broth is important and
yeah.
why people all around the world have been consuming and making bone broth and drinking it. There's a reason why my parents fucking fed me ginseng, ginger, and turmeric my whole life. It's because it is actually healthy.
And anti-inflammatory. Yeah.
But literally the way that it was, like, the way that it has been
commodified.
Yeah, yeah, and made into something that is no longer about nutrition and health and deliciousness, but just about, in my mind, making yourself small. Like, truly, it's all about making yourself small.
Except now it's healthy.
Yeah.
You're trying to be healthy now. I'm doing scare quotes.
What do you mean making ourselves small?
I mean, literally by making ourselves thinner.
Oh, like physically small.
Physically smaller. Okay. And also that this is part of, like, a patriarchal system to make women small is because how much brain space did we spend on knowing what keto is instead of Iran?
Right, yeah.
You know, it, like, makes us smaller because we become obsessed with it. And I'm not saying that as, like, some sort of shade to women who, because I do it too.
Yeah.
And it's because we've been programmed to.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I want women to forgive themselves for
not doing it.
Yeah.
Right, totally. Right, right, right.
I just want us to be easier on ourselves, and it's very, very hard.
Well, also, Emily, it's like, being small. Small as in, like, fixate, like, mentally small, and the amount
socially,
of energy that you that you pour into this thing that ultimately doesn't affect the world very much. But also, like, there is something real about taking up less real estate as a human body in the world. I mean, you feel it every day on the subway, and there's, like, this huge, I don't know, there's this impetus to just be like, I should not take up any space at all. Like, I should do the opposite of man spread. You know, I should make myself as the least impediment that I possibly can. I think the other thing about, especially when you get into stuff like turmeric and you know, new wonder ingredients that you know, are actually have long traditions in other cultures, is, like, a lot of it is exoticism too.
Yeah, totally.
It's like, I mean, it's eating the special food to be special. As opposed to just, like, taking something into your daily routine and not making a big deal about it. Like, just being like, no, this is just, like, what I eat every day, instead of, you know, having to ask for the special menu somewhere, or, you know, the way that you mentally approach food when you go to get a latte or whatever, and whatever kind of milk you ask for. I mean, when you ask for the oat milk as opposed to the almond milk, like, you're making a decision about your identity.
There's something performative
about it. Yeah, there is, totally. Not that oat milk is the most exotic thing in the world, but you know what I mean?
But, like, matcha has existed for a very long time.
And matcha is great.
Yeah.
It's, like, the best caffeine. And I am glad that it's now available everywhere, because nothing gets me spracked like matcha. but you know, and before it was like, oh, you have to go to the Japanese grocery or the Asian grocery or whatever to get it. And now it's just everywhere. You can get it at Gregory's
coffee.
You know
what makes me angry, though?
What?
Is, like, vegan kimchi made by white people. Makes me just feel angry. Even though I am glad that all of the corner stores carry kimchi, I'm just like, just you go buy it in bulk in Koreatown and then bring it and resell it in your bodega.
Oh,
but
right.
Don't buy the white people stuff.
Right.
It makes me feel crazy.
So, yeah, I mean, I feel – right, because – so we're all – where are you? What are your backgrounds?
I'm Korean.
I'm half Japanese.
Okay. So – and I'm Iranian. And so there's –
we all – it's a very mashy conversation.
We're very mashy conversation. Yeah. And so we all have come from cultures that have, you know, used – like, have – pickled foods and have you
people
you know
are like probiotics
right
like,
you've
been knowing about probiotics.
It's so funny because my parents would just every day pull out some random pickled things and just eat them because that's what Iranians do, and like I growing up I was always like gross, but now I was like, oh, the wisdom of that thing, you know. And turmeric is just in my mom would just like toss it in everything. It wasn't a big deal. It's just like what I grew up. Chia seeds, like these are things in Iran that they would eat. Every time you're like sick, people would be like, have some chia seeds, you know, like it was a thing that just happened all the time without it being commodified and having a special aisle in the grocery store.
But I think the thing that like I've been thinking about a lot lately is this like kind of element of shame that comes with it, is that like we're supposed to be aware, right? Like, you're supposed to want to treat your body well, and it's a good thing to treat your body well. But then to, like, there's something, I don't know, I feel like in some circles where, like, it becomes embarrassing to then talk about the fact that or embarrassing that you do care about, like, wanting to look good in a picture for a special event, because feminists or smart women aren't supposed to want that. But so then you become embarrassed about the thing that we're told by the world that we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And it's like a double.
It's a vicious cycle. Yeah. You can't get out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a person who's done, like, several juice cleanses before. And, like, I would always do it over – I used to do it over Thanksgiving break because everybody would be out of town. And I was like, I could just be at home and never have to, like, be seen in public with a juice of all things and, like, just go to the spa and hole up.
And, like, people do that with, like, getting, like, laser peels. Like, they do it on a weekend when they never have to leave the house.
Whatever. We can pretend it doesn't exist.
Right. There's a shame in doing it and there's a shame in not doing it. And, yeah, or, like, not wanting to preserve yourself that way.
Right. You know, and it's just, like, why – the thing that makes it feel like an industrial complex is that.
Yeah.
Like when I love Jamila Jamil and her campaign called I Weigh. Mm-hmm. And it's just – it's about, like, the politics of body, right? And she recently posted, like, an ad. Maybe it was, like, Amber Rose was doing an ad for flat belly tea, but it was for, like, prenatal flat belly tea.
What?
It was for pregnant women to take –
oh, my God.
Like, and I was like, now, sense. Like, the one place, even though I have a lot to say about how you're only supposed to be pregnant one way, and, like, a good pregnancy only looks like a belly's supposed to look a certain way, you're only supposed to gain weight here, and you're only, but all of that.
Yeah.
But that, like, the one time where women are like, well, I'm going to gain 40 pounds, and it's going to be a thing that is, like, at least socially acceptable here.
Yeah.
Now there's flat belly tea for pregnancy? Like, I know. Are you kidding me?
I know. It's horrible. It's horrible. Yeah, because it's like a great pregnancy is one in which you only gain that little belly. You don't have any hips involved or whatever. And, I'm deep in it, right, because I'm postpartum. I'm like 15 pounds to where I was before. I think about it constantly. It kills me. I look in the mirror. I get upset. I mean, I'm deep in this vicious self-hating, all of that, deep in it. And I've also – so, like, I look at this – and there's so many angles to look at this. One, I have done the keto thing, and – the interesting thing about keto, I come from a family of doctors, and keto is something that's actually prescribed to a lot of people that have, like, kidney problems, whatever. It's a medically, like, makes sense, you know, and it's a way to it's a hormone balancer, and there's all these benefits to it, right? Mm-hmm. And it's basically like you just basically eat meat and vegetables and healthy fats, and it's like how basically people ate back in the day, you know, because for most of human history, we didn't have wheat and we didn't have farming, right? And so it's like, this is how people ate. And so it makes sense. The human body runs better that way. And when I've done it, I've had, again, it feels embarrassing to even admit it, but, like, I've had insane amounts of energy. Yeah. I lost a bunch of weight. I felt better than I ever felt in my entire life. My skin was so clear. My hair was so thick. My everything. I mean, all that stuff is absolutely true. And I think I think what's happening right now is, like, a response to the 80s and 90s where we sort of didn't realize that what food did. Like, we didn't know that when we were packaging and processing everything that it was going to have a harmful effect on us. So my puberty, I ate every day during middle school, Funyuns. I was on a
Funyuns are good.
I think I mentioned that on this podcast before. I was on a Funyuns only regime.
Funyuns and Bugles. Do you guys remember?
Oh, my God. Yes. That is literally all I ate. And I would go home and my mom would make, like, a beautiful balanced square Iranian meal. And then then at school, and where my parents probably thought I was eating well, had no idea that going to school could be have the most dangerous health consequences. Yeah.
Well, public school lunches are a nightmare.
And we're only now kind of coming to terms with that. But a lot of people like me came of age eating nothing but processed, hormonally imbalancing total garbage. And so then we all have these stomachs that hurt and inflammation and craziness for what reasons that are unclear. And also the physical body was designed to run from bears and to hunt and gather berries, right? Like that's what we were supposed to do. Instead, we have a lot of
time. Not watch BTS videos all day long?
Yes, not watch those. Exactly.
That's healthy, though. That's super healthy. It cleans out so many toxins.
It really does. Yeah. I love myself more.
But well, you know what I mean? So yeah. I feel like going back to what the human condition was supposed to – there. I do appreciate this, the keto diet. I do appreciate knowing about those things because I do honestly have experienced the health benefits of it. And I look at things – my dad is a cardiovascular thoracic surgeon. Whenever he looks at people, he just knee-jerk diagnoses them. That belly is too fat. It's this much percentage of heart disease in the future. You know, this – oh, your thyroids look this. Your blah, blah, blah. He's just diagnosing people because we are overweight,
right,
you know? So there is something about that I don't want to, you know, I don't want to be like, big is beautiful. Big is beautiful, but healthy is also important. And I know that these are all like.
Yeah, they can exist together. Yeah.
But I think that's the piece of what we're talking about, sex work and trafficking, that like being put in a box. I think size and health have always been put in a box.
We're learning how to. I also think like size and health and class have been wrapped up in a really unhealthy way too. I mean, we talk about like something like school lunches or, you know, free lunch programs at schools, which, you know, if you're lucky in your state, you get a fresh vegetable, but usually you don't. And so the idea of like counteracting that, of eating more whole foods, of having less processed stuff, stuff that hasn't been hormonally engineered or whatever, that all becomes wrapped up in class then, because you have to be able to afford it. You have to be able to have access to it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I feel like this is always a perennial issue in California, and I think some other states have had this too, where they there's always a bill or a measure up to have to label all foods that have GMOs in them. And GMOs, like, some are bad for you.
Mm-hmm. But didn't, like, we save India from starvation? The scientists were like, we can grow corn this way.
Yeah.
and now we won't starve to death.
Almost every single crop in America has been genetically engineered at some time or another just so that we have enough of it. Like, it is just a given. And there are always bills that come up to label these products, you know, to warn everybody that this product has GMOs. And I understand why people want to move towards being more aware about their food in that way. But I also think that something about that, I'm just like, that's a nightmare then for anybody who can't afford to have anything else. Like, it's just being reminded of at all times that you're having the bad food.
Because the real crime here is that if we all agree that having whole foods is better, it's always more expensive. Yeah. And that's the real – and that is something out of
and
policy –
And if we can't provide them, then like –
Yeah, and it's something that at a policy level isn't being addressed when we do talk about labeling GMO foods, you know? And that having a GMO food is healthier than having – still healthier – if it's cheaper than having, you know, a box of mac and cheese or whatever.
I mean, corn on the cob. If you like corn on the cob in the summer, you're eating GMOs. Like, you just are. And I love corn on the cob. I love GMOs.
Pro GMO. Yeah. Pro Israel. What are the anti-human trafficking?
Right, we're okay with GMOs in the event that they help people. We're pro Israel. How do we kind of unbundle these things so that we can it almost feels like we can't mention health when we are talking about weight. You know what I mean? Culturally.
Yeah. I mean, it's also always either way, you're kind of screwed, because if you're genuinely doing something like a keto diet because you feel better and it does measurably improve your life, everybody will think you're doing it to lose weight.
Yeah.
Like, and then you're living that shame.
I think this issue comes up, or this idea comes up a lot, of like, especially with like skincare now too, just like this idea of, regardless of the outcome of whatever you're doing, whatever practice you've taken on, that there is something beneficial in just the doing of it. of like making a decision to, you know, want to treat yourself a little bit better in whatever small way that you can. You don't have to go out and buy a $100 eye cream or whatever. Like you can just decide.
Oh, the joys of doing such a thing. Oh,
if you can. But I mean, just deciding, like, I mean, years and years ago, I love ice cream so much. I grew up in the Midwest. I mean, dairy central USA.
But where did you grow up?
In Iowa.
Oh, I grew up in Illinois.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. I mean, still dairy, like the land of the frozen custard. And I went to a nutritionist in a bout of like, oh, I need to try all these different things to fix my body. And she pointed out that I was, you know, massively lactose intolerant, which I probably knew because I always felt like shit after I had a
ice cream.
An ice cream or a milkshake. But then I stopped doing it. And I have been dairy free now for over a decade. And it's like, ultimately a good decision that I made. But you still feel like such a precious little flower when you're at a Italian restaurant.
When I'm doing, like, you know, when I'm keto or something like that, I will, like, never mention it, you know, because I don't want to be considered that person. Yeah. But at the same time, I proselytize about it because I'm like, oh, it feels great, you know. And so it is, it's like you're, you know, caught in this really weird web where you're like, but being dairy-free really works for me.
Yeah.
And there are legitimate physical ailments that people have. I mean, IBS is not something is a modern problem because of our food. And so we do need to be more, you know.
Right. I think the challenge when it's like to connect this idea back to the wellness industry and like the people who are profiting off of this, it's like I'm also lactose intolerant, and I figured that out kind of in my mid-30s. And I was like, literally everything hurts.
Mm-hmm.
Like my knuckles hurt, like my stomach kind of, like just everything hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, I'll do one of those like arthritis diets, which is like, you know, just an elimination diet, right? Where you're like, okay, well, I'm going to take out these things and then I'm going to add them back and see what it is. And I was like, lo and behold, I'm way lactose intolerant. And big surprise, like 90% of Asian people develop lactose intolerance in their lives. And I was like, why? And then again, but then you're like, I can't do this. Yeah, and you're like, now I'm that person who's like the dairy-free person.
Yeah.
But about the like the industry of wellness, I think there's something that the piece of it that makes me sad and not just like angry is that this is a woman's industry.
Yes.
It's a woman's issue.
Yeah.
And so much of it is about like I think – and I will speak completely for myself, like my own desperation to find solutions for which science has none because science and research is fucking sexist.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, well, I'm 40. I'm like experiencing like the hormonal changes that come to a woman when they are 40. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Like, why do I have this? Why do I have this? And I'm talking to like these brilliant women friends of mine that are like maybe 4 or 5 years older. And they're the ones pushing some like – not pushing, being like, well, like I didn't know. And so I tried this like Maca Life supplement. Mm-hmm. And it's like we're all kind of grasping for straws because we want to feel better. And like science has not provided things.
And
so it's like people make fun of like being like, oh, I'm going to – you're going to buy that astragalus whatever thing on the internet. And you're like, yeah, because – what are my other alternatives? Like, I need to figure out what's happening.
Right. And I think what would have happened back in the days, we all would have lived in a complex with our aunties. And then if at your 30th birthday, your aunties would have been like, take this, you know, route.
Right.
And then at your 40th birthday, they would have been like, start taking this oil tincture. You know what I mean? And we don't have that kind of like passed down like knowledge anymore. That's not how things are happening. How things are now happening is through the, you know, the Goop newsletter.
Yeah.
You know? And so like, and so it is, it's commodified in a way that is sad. And it is preying on the shift that women do naturally have in their physical person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or like why, you know, I so appreciate you talking about being postpartum and being like, I'm living in a world of self-hatred right now, even though I shouldn't be in blah, blah, blah. But like, I don't feel like myself.
Yeah.
Because you're just going through like constant transitions. Women go through constant transitions in a way that
men don't.
Mm-hmm. And we just... Similar to like doing a juice cleanse when nobody else is out of town, or like getting a chemical peel when like you're not going to see people, is like we're also not supposed to talk about it, which then makes it, we're like in this veil of secrecy, which then you're like, shh, I'm gonna read Goop even though I think it's fucking snake oil and I know that they don't fact check anything, but like maybe it'll help.
Maybe there's something in there, just a nugget.
The fucking female body is the fucking craziest shit ever, you guys. Like, I have literally gotten postpartum vertigo.
Ooh.
What? You know what I mean? I didn't know that vertigo was going to be a problem. I mean, what is everybody talking about? Vertigo? And so you are like Googling, please, you know, in a please help me.
Yeah.
Like, and I'll do anything.
And this is,
I'll fucking do anything because vertigo is really fucked up and I don't understand why is this, you know?
Yeah.
And so I get it. And if you're Googling those things, don't feel bad. Also try not to buy into the snake oil, but also if you do buy into it, it's okay.
Don't become an anti-vaxxer, please. Also.
Just don't do that. Just don't do that.
Yeah. All right, you guys. I feel like we could talk about this for hours, but we're not going to because we have to end the show. That is the end of the show. We always end the show by asking you guys, how do you feel?
I feel overwhelmed and damp because it is very humid.
It's real damp
in New York today. It feels like I'm swimming psychologically and physically constantly. That's where I'll
put
it.
That is the American condition.
Damp. I feel... I feel, oh God, why is this so hard to talk about my feelings? I feel really great about both of you guys' eye fashion, which I told you about. They're both really cute glasses right now.
You guys will see it in the picture that we take after the
show.
But
you might find this amusing is that I, as a lifelong glasses and contacts wearer, last year I got LASIK because it was part of my preparation for the apocalypse.
Oh, wow. That's a really good idea.
Legit.
I'm farsighted, so mine hasn't been perfected yet. My thingy with LASIK. I'm not opposed.
No, I mean,
that's brilliant.
Also, the eye surgeon was like, oh, yeah, when people get panicked, so like after 9/11, like LASIK went up. Like after bad news.
Reaching
happens.
For your glasses in a time of crisis is precious seconds.
Yeah, well, my husband always laughs at me. He's like, well, when the apocalypse comes, like, you're going to get eaten by lions. Like, I can't see the lion. So, like, what's going to, you know, I was like, I need to protect my, it was.
Meanwhile, I can see
where the lions coming from.
I don't know where the lions
are.
You know, those zombies?
Those Manhattan lions. I can see the lions. I just can't, I won't be able to, like, read, like, the original version of the Constitution that I'll have access to. Because that's my problem. I can see a distance. I can't see the, like, right in front of me. Well, you guys, you know who also has a killer pair of glasses is Harry Nelson, who helps make this show happen. He's our producer. I also want to thank the other people at Fake the Nation that make things happen, like our audio engineer, Jared O'Connell. He doesn't wear glasses, but he's still a great guy. Lily Fleshler helps with research. Gabi Alter is responsible for our theme music. And I should also point out that he has a new album coming out, so you'll be hearing about that from me. I'm going to bring him on the show and play a tune or two. Very excited. You'll love it. If you like our theme music, you'll just love everything that Gabi does. He's brilliant. And you guys, we'd love to hear from you. Please send us your feedback, topics that you want us to
chat about. I've been getting such great emails, and I'm going to just, I'm slowly incorporating them in these episodes. So if you've been sending emails, I hope you are noticing the incorporation. But please leave us a voicemail at 347-770-4981 or drop us a line at comments@fakethenation.com. And if you like what you hear, please leave us a review at Apple Podcasts because it helps people find the show. That's an actual thing. That's it, you guys. Thank you so much, and we'll be back in your earballs next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yay! Hey. We did it. Let's take a photo.